It is noontime, everybody, on the 6th of October, 2021, here on the East Coast. Anyway, I'm Larry Jacobs. Welcome to today's Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio Show. Got a real treat for you. Thanks to CCSSO, the Council of Chief State School Officers, our good friends here. They have set me up with the Commissioner of Education in my own state. I talked to everybody all over the country. I'm so thrilled. Pender Macon is here today. Ms. Pender Macon, who was appointed in 2019 by Governor Mills here and is really leading a very innovative system here. We're going to talk to Pender all about it today and find out what her background is, where she got the job, her plans for the future, all this kind of stuff. It's really going to be a nice show, and it's all about Maine. I'm here in Maine, okay? So it's really cool to be talking to her today. As you can tell, I'm excited. We are the voice of the American Consortium for Equity in Education over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. That's our main website. We're going to archive the show over there, as we always do. Our magazine, Equity and Access, is there as well. It's a wonderful magazine, Equity Access Pre-K-12. It's an online journal. So go over to ace-ed.org. We just put up the October issue. And so you'll really, really enjoy it. Got some great stories in there. So please check that out. All our podcasts are over there. And there's a link to our new website, which is all about social emotional learning, which is called SEL Today. And it's seltoday.org. So please, we're just started that site. It's doing great so far. Got a great news feed about SEL and all sorts of articles and stuff, and all the SEL-oriented podcasts, okay, are over there as well. So you'll see the link for seltoday.org over at ace-ed.org. And enough of me blabbing here from little old Cornish, Maine. Let me go. Let's find out where – Pender, where are you? Where are you today? Are you in Augusta, or where are you? It's Larry here.
Hi, good morning. Hi, Larry. Can you hear me okay?
I can.
Oh, great. Hi. No, I am actually on the road. I am in Belfast, Maine. I'm going to pull over to the side, by the way. I've carved this out. I'm so excited to talk to you.
Let me just tell you, and I say this without hesitation, of all the towns in Maine, Belfast is my favorite.
That's awesome. Yeah, one of my favorite as well. So, yeah.
So go over there and buy a pair of shoes, and everybody listen to this. The shoe store in Belfast, Maine, is the oldest continuously operating shoe store in the entire United States since, like, 1823. Did you know that, Pender?
You know what? I did not know that, but I might have to go over
Main
and get
Street.
A pair of shoes.
Main Street.
Awesome.
The oldest continuing shoe store in the United States. Folks, if you come to Maine, don't miss Belfast. I love Belfast, Maine. We'll move on from there. So, Pender, it's great to have you here. I really mean it. I'm a little excited, as you can tell from my voice. All right, just talk about your background. I want everybody to know this because you have a really cool background. Okay, and now you're the Commissioner of Education here in Maine. Talk about your background. I love this. This is great. Go ahead. What do you do prior to this?
Well, I don't know how far back you want me to go. I could start at age 8. I worked on a fishing boat.
Go ahead. Age 8, worked on a fishing boat. Part of the main resume system. Go ahead. Yeah. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, I worked on my dad's deep sea fishing boat until I was 18 or 20 years old. And
Where was that?
He went originally out of Pine Point in Scarborough, and then once the he got a bigger boat. It was too big to go through the harbor there. So they moved over to Camp Ellis, which is the mouth of the Saco River.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And my more relevant resume articles, I guess.
Yes.
These are
relevant to Maine. I like this. Go ahead.
I spent a lot of my career I've been in ed tech. I have been a classroom teacher. I think my entire career I specifically worked with at-risk, marginalized, underserved kids, mostly with extraordinary behavioral challenges. I did that as an educator in an alternative education program, and then as an administrator / educator / bus driver and custodian and everything else in a large regional alternative education school called The Real School, where 28 sending school districts would send the, you know, the elite force of individual kids whose needs hadn't been safely or adequately met in any other method applied in their sending districts. And so they would come to our school altogether. And we created one of the most amazing, loving, welcoming environments you could imagine. I can imagine.
Yeah, I can imagine that you did a great job. I can't imagine you would just
say. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, you're awesome. So, yeah, and then I've served in the central office role of assistant superintendent of schools.
That's in Brunswick, right?
Yep, that was in Brunswick.
Great.
Brunswick, Maine. Home of Bowdoin College.
I was just going to say that. That's right.
Yeah. And then, to my surprise, one day I received a phone call from somebody I had never heard of before asking if I'd like to come interview for the position of Commissioner of Education. And I honestly thought, I even knew who this practical joker was. I was convinced
it
was a friend of mine, Martin Macchio. Anyway, but I was so incredibly honored and was able to go to that interview. And I had, when the governor was first elected, I was
overjoyed. Janet Mills.
Governor Mills. Yeah, yes. I was filled with hope for our future. And I, journaling activity, I wrote a letter to the future Commissioner of Education. I wrote, "Dear future Commissioner of Education for the state of Maine, you know, my name's Tender. I work in Brunswick. Here's what I think needs to get fixed right away. This is what has to happen different for you." And I wrote a long letter. And it probably is absolutely unfit for anybody to ever have read because I really put out my frustration, let's just say. At any rate, when I ended up at this interview, I was called on a Sunday. Monday morning, I show up at an interview, and I had my letter with me, but I had cleaned up the language considerably and, you know, made it far more but it was nice to have – I had a platform. I didn't realize, but I had my platform right there ready to go.
Did the call come from Governor Mills, Janet, or did it come
it came from a member of a transition team, and they set me up with an interview not with Governor Mills, but rather with some members of this transition team, none of whom I'd ever met before. Yeah, it was really cool. And then then I got a final interview. I was a nervous wreck. But you know, it was a great interview, and I think we spent maybe an hour and a half talking about education and her vision for expanding universal access to pre-K and workforce development and so many really exciting pieces. We sure do.
Yeah, we do. We do.
And
I got to tell you, congratulations, because I work with CSSO a lot, CCSSO a lot. Okay, and I talk to a lot of the commissioners of education, and as a group, I got to tell you, you know them all now. They're really good people.
They're amazing.
Okay, and they really
care.
And I'm going to say this: the Republican or Democrat, some are appointed, some are elected. They're really great people, and they care about education. And they're lucky to have you in the group because you bring a very unusual background to this: a loving, caring educator. Okay, without all the Ivy League degrees and all that sort of stuff, okay, and without the heavy political rap, you bring a love of education, okay, to the office, okay, and again, I can say that, I can say that they learned to love education, but I'll tell you to have this background is just super, Pender. We're lucky to have you, and you're lucky to be there. It's great.
Yeah, it is an incredible honor every single day. I literally have to pinch myself every morning to say, wow, I get to be Commissioner of Education for the state of Maine. Even on the worst day I've ever had to face, I have felt so honored and so lucky. And I look at every minute as an opportunity for us to support and strengthen what is absolutely the most, it's the foundational piece of any hope for a thriving democracy in the future is our public education system, and that I get to work on that. I'm so grateful for every opportunity I have to do that.
And
my team,
we're
also
grateful to have you.
Yeah, we got a team. Thank you.
Yeah, and I know you got a good team, and I'll tell you, and I just want to put this into a little bit of perspective. we're in New England. We're northern New England. But people think New England is made up of all tiny little states. And I just want to say geographically, Maine is not a tiny little state. Maine is about an eight-hour drive north to south, okay? And it goes from heavy mountains and heavy forests to the coast, all right? And people live way, way, way up north, okay, right along the Canadian border, way up north, okay? And they need the same education opportunities as where the center of population is, which is really Bangor and south, if I may, okay? And Bangor, which everybody thinks is all so far north, is about a third of the way up the state. Okay, and we have to get you, and we have to provide education for these kids and for this state. And I just have to say this, okay? Again, as a Mainer, okay, we are demographically the oldest state in the union. The population is very skews to the elderly side. This is a great state to live in, okay? And we can't have every kid run off and go down to New York or Miami or L.A. or wherever the heck they want to go. We need great people here, and it's the education system and the workforce development and the online education that gives access to everybody that's going to make that happen, because this is a great place to live. Your thoughts? That's my spiel for today. What do you think?
Well, I think you're spot on. We are a tremendously – it's a vast geographic state. We have a lot of diversity in terms of what communities expect from
right.
and are willing to put into, or are able, by the way, to put into their education system. And Maine being one of the many local control, as they say, states.
Yep.
The work of equity and making sure that there is access yep. to a world-class education for every child in the state of Maine.
Here, here.
It's a daunting challenge, but I do think just what you said, I think people are going to see our natural resources, our state's inherent like vitality, beauty, and unique. I mean, there's no place like Maine. And
I agree.
I think now that everyone has discovered telework, it's a thing now. Like, this is like totally acceptable in the mainstream. So all of you listening, you could come work at Maine. You could, we'd hope you'd come and live here in Maine, but you could
yes.
come and live in Maine and work anywhere.
Anywhere.
You can just telecommute. Yep.
Anywhere.
And we're working. It's wonderful. So I do see a lot of hope and exciting, innovative opportunities for economic development and for being able to share with so many other people this incredible lifestyle that is, you know, our great state.
Right. And you certainly, you started in 2019, which was such an easy time since then to be the Commissioner of Education. Nothing much happened. Everything just went along as normal. Okay. And the crazy thing is, as lousy as this pandemic has been everywhere in the country, death, sickness, you know, I don't have to tell you, economic chaos,
yeah.
whatever. Okay. But we've learned lessons. Okay, and we have learned, and this is your key word, and I love this word, we've learned how to innovate, all right? And it ain't going to be the way it was before. And I want you to talk about your whole idea, and I know you brought this to the table and you're doing it, all right, of innovation in Maine schools. And I'm just going to open the
yeah.
link that way and go through it, and then we're going to talk about all the acronyms you have. But go over Maine. Go over innovation. You have an acronym. We're
all
going
right.
to the acronym world later, but go do innovation right now.
Hello. All right. Well, I want to just give a little nod to historically what an innovative state Maine has been. So even way back in like maybe 2001, I'd love to take all the credit, but then Governor Angus King, he set up, he had a vision for having every student in certain grade levels, and now it's basically middle school and high school students, under our ML, oh, it's an acronym, it's Maine Learning Through Technology Initiative.
Right.
We got laptops right. into the hands of every student. We were the only,
yeah.
we were the first state, and for a long time, the only
yeah.
state to have done that. It was every child had a one-to-one device, and then there was a lot of professional development. So 20 years ago, some of this groundwork was already laid out, and we have a team at the Department of Innovative Teaching and Learning who work with educators and use a train-the-trainer model, so the educators are sharing with their colleagues their innovative approaches and practices with respect to technology-based educational, you know, having technology as the vector, the medium through which kids can access education, it turns out, even in a pandemic. So thank you, then Governor King, for that. And then flashing forward, I would say a few things are very important in order to have a really, truly innovative educational environment, culture, you know, kind of thing. One is pre-forgiveness. In other words, creating a culture where educators and school leaders are not afraid to take a risk, to step out there and say, you know, this is an exciting possibility, let's go for it. And to be able to, if something shouldn't work out just perfectly, to be able to take every gift in that potential, I hate to call it a failure, but in that learning experience, yeah, and turn that around into additional innovation. And for a long time, nationally, the culture of innovative practice has been, in my opinion, quashed by some overly heavy reliance on standardized testing as the one and only measure. And I don't discount that as one way to illustrate disparities and to keep the focus on the fact that we're not equally serving all children. So that's critically important. However, it's not the only measure. And when it became that, whatever has become easy to measure and plot on a graph has taken on a bit of false importance for about 20 years. And whatever is perhaps more important but difficult to measure and plot on a graph has had to be set aside in a lot of places nationally, because we have to just, you know, demonstrate anything that we can get into a 0 to 4 point scale and show that type of growth. And so what we've seen is that over the years, teachers have had the creativity maybe taken out of their hands and replaced with prefab, you know, products. And then also they've even lost track of the fact that their teacher eyes are finely tuned assessment instruments, and that they, in fact, can see and they do know in real time that a student is, you know, and they've lost their own sense that that's a valid judgment or a valid perspective. And they went to school for this and they've done it for years in so many cases. And we need to, in order to best serve kids, we have to re-empower, reinvigorate educators with a true sense of their professionalism. Similarly, school leaders and district leaders, educational leaders across the board, have had a lot of their leadership stuff removed and replaced by, you know, whether, you know, top-down mandates and, you know, well-intentioned initiatives, and they've turned into managers, like middle management is the best. What we need is courageous, you know, decisive, empowering leaders to say, whatever we've been doing, because I haven't seen in 20 years, and with all of the attention to outcomes-based education, I haven't seen us as a nation, even sadly as a state, move the needle very far in terms of the measures that we've been looking at, and we haven't closed any equity gaps at all. In fact, they've only been exacerbated over the past couple of decades. And so we really, right, we've had to for a number of years now, we know that we have to do some things very differently. Suddenly comes the pandemic, we now actually have to. So it has created a natural break, because we always have been just treading water saying, yes, as soon as we get to a place where we can breathe, we're going to change this, we're going to do something different. We'll be more innovative and we'll take things on. But instead, we've just actually been pulled out of the water, and now we're, you know, on an island somewhere, or whatever it is. Yeah. There's been a break created. And the COVID pandemic has caused so much harm, so much pain, so much sickness and death, as you mentioned, has created untenable disruptions to the education of our children nationwide and here in Maine to some extent. But to, I would say, you know, significantly less extent than most places for a couple of reasons. But at the end of the day, there is the one gift. And I think that that might be the key to innovation, is knowing that whether it's a failure or a natural disaster or a global pandemic, every extreme challenge, every disruption also brings with it some opportunities if we're able to keep our eyes open for those pieces. And that's the perspective that's hard to maintain when you're struggling constantly. It's hard to have your eyes focused for where are the diamonds in this rubble, you know. But I think that the ingredient, the main ingredient for educational innovation would be, it has to be pre-forgiveness as a statewide culture or a district or even a school-wide culture. A local school could create this culture where educators are encouraged to seek and obtain professional development in such different from educational ideas, but and not just pedagogical or here's a new model to try, but here in Maine, for example, we're trying to get people to engage in coursework that we are paying for through a federal grant that we received in innovation engineering. So we're hoping to get like a culture of R&D, like educational R&D. We want the educators, we want the paraprofessional support staff, and especially the school and district leaders. We want them all to come away with like a certification, like a legitimate educational experience in innovation engineering and educational design. So that we are reinvigorating the actual practitioners as the experts that they have to be.
And you're right about something else. They have to be, and this is not meant to be derogatory to any educator. People need to be reinvigorated. Okay, they need that. All right, and it's key. And if you offer this to people, okay, I just hope they take advantage of it. And on that note, are people taking advantage? How's all these things you're saying getting? What's the reaction from educators?
Right. Well, of course, we're just getting it out there. But yeah, we've had an overwhelming response. We have a lot of people who've already gone through the first or second, maybe now group of, it's called REV, R-R-E-V, you know, acronym. So here comes an acronym. It was originally Reinvent Remote Education, because that was what we had to do for the federal grants program.
Yeah, yeah.
But now we know we don't want to say remote education is a bad thing, because some kids actually did thrive under those circumstances.
Yeah, absolutely.
But by and large, most children really, truly benefit for that every day, in person, being with their peers, learning in a group setting. And, you know, it's a hard thing to go without, I think. So we changed it to, I think it's Reimagining Responsive Education Ventures. So it's still REV.
Okay.
And it's a program that the first goal is to get the educators and the professionals doing educational work to a place where they know how to conduct design thinking, action research, and to really, you know, be those innovators of educational and pedagogical processes, and to be able to pilot things and to test for themselves, is this effective or is it not, and how to really, you know, adjust, make adjustments in the moment. And so we've had a lot of them do that, and a lot of them have developed under this program really exciting educational models that will be available with grant funding for implementation to other educators really nationwide. And so we're going to build a big library of innovative educational practices, and there's funding for schools to implement these practices all through the same grant. So that's one thing that we've been in, and it's been really great.
Isn't that wonderful? Okay, that the idea is you can actually see them come to fruition and see them start to work and see people get involved and react to it. And it's really cool. I have to ask you, and I've asked several, in fact, I did a show a few months ago with the, I can't remember the gentleman's name, wonderful guy, the commissioner up in Alaska, having a terrible time getting teachers, terrible teacher shortage.
Yeah.
Okay, and what's going on here in Maine with that?
Yeah, well, I think it's a national problem. And
it is.
It has been a problem. It was, you know, it was an extreme problem. And post-COVID, it's even worse, as you can imagine. So we've done a number of things. We set up an office pre-COVID that's in charge of recruitment, retention, support, celebration of the education profession. And we've reinvested in programs that honor and recognize teachers. We've really streamlined our certification process and made that, I think we're faster than the industry standard anyway. I think we've got like a three-week turnaround, and that's pretty great. Because for a while, I mean, it was over 6 months for a turnaround for a certificate. But we also realized we really needed to get an influx, especially going into last school year, which was our first school year under the COVID pandemic.
Right.
And so we reached out to our partners in Maine Community College System. Talk about innovation. I don't know if you've ever talked to those guys, but man, they are like, what do you need? And they'll build it in the air. Like,
I love community colleges. I'm a huge fan of community colleges.
Oh, me too.
Yeah, go ahead.
Me too. So we worked with them to develop something called the Learning Facilitator. It's really a boot camp. It's a highly concentrated alternative pathway for people who hadn't previously thought about education as, you know, a possible career pathway.
That's
they
great.
Can engage in this community college program that gives them a lot of intensive instruction in everything from, you know, pedagogical mm-hmm. pieces, but also class important things like classroom management, school safety, all of the critical things that you wish maybe a substitute teacher would know coming into the classroom. But, you know, sadly, that isn't a thing. So
that's
they get this
sure.
tremendous, yeah, really big training. And then they are the department used some of our federal relief funds to cover costs for schools to deploy these individuals who had completed the boot camp style preparation program to deploy them in classrooms to support learning, to be additional staff members working under the supervision of a certified teacher as they
mm-hmm.
continue their educational process. And at the end of this, I think by the end of summer, many of them achieved a credential, like at least an educational technician. So they are now, they've reentered the workforce this year. So we have, oh gosh, I wish I had the numbers in my head, but I think we had over 100 new certified people came out
That's
of the
great.
Program last year. And then we have another 100 and something that have entered this year's program and that are out in the field helping as well. So we're working as hard as we can. We're open to any ideas, and we are always urging people to consider education as a career. And even whether you're a bus driver, we need bus drivers. We need nutrition services people. We
yeah.
need everybody. So wrap your arms around your schools, people.
And I'll give you a good idea, which every school, they have a career fair for the kids, okay? And they always forget
mm-hmm.
to put the education booth up. Okay, they have firemen and
yeah.
veterinarian and nurse and whatever other wonderful professions there are. Okay, I should say firefighter, not fireman, but firefighter. Okay, but okay, they sometimes forget to put the teacher booth up there. Okay,
exactly.
And we got to make sure that people understand this is a good profession. All
right,
a very good
right.
profession. All right, and there's ways
yep.
to get there and doing it and give back to the community. I mean, the schools have to. You got to grow your own sometimes. And we just got to do this. You know, Pender, I got to ask you, well, you know, you're an educator. And now, if I may, 2 years in, you're the Commissioner of Education, okay, for the great
mm-hmm.
state of Maine, okay? Do you feel more like a politician these days or an educator?
That's an excellent question.
I'm going to give myself an A for that question. I love that question.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say a politician in terms of, you know.
Well, I don't mean you're running for office, but you know what I mean.
No, it's
balancing.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
I think we spend a lot of time educating adults and supporting the legislative process. Like, I would say a big part of our job that feels political is the amount of legislation that is thrust. We have a long legislative session. We have a lot of legislators and people who have ideas on how school ought to be done better. Everybody went to school, so they all kind of have that expertise and want to, you know, put in bills. And for us to be working with legislators to understand what might be the unintended consequences around a particular piece or how something might be better suited or might work well, you know, so those types of pieces are the, so it's, I feel less like a teacher of kids, that's for sure. And I do miss that.
That's
and
very
you know
interesting
what?
Answer. That's great.
I'm going to go back to the classroom before I'm done. I think, you know, maybe my retirement job someday, but I
Andrew,
do,
you got
I
a long way to go
team.
Before you're done. You got a long way to go before
well,
you're done. Believe me.
We have a long way to go.
And you know, I have to ask, and there's all the one of the things that's coming up, and I just read an article yesterday about superintendents being under such pressure over the last year, but with COVID, okay, and people
mm-hmm.
are angry, you know, certainly know the mask debates that go on, et cetera, all right? And we want to get kids back in school. We want to get kids back in school safely. And by the way, I should say our kids have been back in school, if I'm not mistaken, last year, right? Last year, like, they were back in school. Right? My kids are too old.
They were.
I don't know, but
yeah,
they were back
yeah.
last year,
no.
right?
Yeah, they started the school year right off in fall,
yeah.
and they were back in person throughout the year. Many schools were in a hybrid, so in other words, the kids often would have an every other day schedule so that they could have a smaller cohort in, but we didn't have our schools, like, shut down At the very beginning of the school year, we were open for business and supporting kids and keeping them connected to their learning. And that was kind of a heavy lift, I have to say. But I'm so proud of the team that we have at the department. We really were seen as a resource and not as something to get out of the way of, which sometimes can be the case. So let's see.
It's really key because you made a point a little while ago. I wrote it down. I'm going to steal the line, by the way. Okay. You said teacher eyes are a great tool for assessment. All right. Mm-hmm. And I love that line. I wrote it down. Okay. It's great. So if you stole it from somebody, too bad. I'm stealing it from you. Okay. I love that line. Okay. And it's true.
Yeah. Well,
and we need to get the kids back in school. And I'm just curious, as commissioner now, has there been a lot of controversy across the state? Because I'm not that familiar with what goes on way up north in terms of masks, vaccines, you know, the usual stuff that everybody's reading about. How are we doing on that?
Right.
Are you taking? Well, let me ask you a simple way. Are you taking a lot of Maalox these days? Tell me. What's going on?
I will say that we certainly do get a lot of mail, and we get a lot of correspondence from very angry, upset people. And, you know, you kind of expect that at the government, we're here to hear. People are frustrated. People are scared. People have lost a great deal. People are grieving. Whatever used to be is not the same as it used to be. There's a lot going on for people across our state and across the nation. However, where it has turned into divisive, political, rancorous, hateful, divisive stuff. I don't know what the answer is going to be, but here's what we need to do. I know the goal. I don't know the truth, how we're going to get there yet. But the goal is we have to remember that we shouldn't be fighting each other. We are all united in.
That's right.
Everybody wants kids in school. It doesn't matter what side of what aisle you're on. You want kids in school. You want them with their friends. You want them learning, healthy, safe. You want all of those things for our kids. We're fighting a virus, like a surging variant of a virus here in Maine that's extremely contagious, and it can cause sickness and death, and it's a pretty bad thing. We need to fight that and not one another. We need to pull together and really focus, like laser focus on how do we best support our schools? How do we support the courageous people who are leading and teaching in our schools so that they can best keep our kids safe and learning and healthy and happy and developing and with their peers, having, a great time instead of hearing these. It's astounding the level of vitriol that we're hearing.
Yeah.
And the enemy is not the school. It's not each other. The enemy is the virus. We got to pull together.
Right.
We just got to figure this out.
And I hope that all tamps down, and I hope people aren't as nuts as they can be, and that things just settle down, okay? Because you're right, it's the kids that matter, all right? And on that note, I have one other question. I know you got to get going here, okay? But you have a program, again, an acronym, okay? An acronym, everybody, you'll love this.
Yeah.
This is the main online opportunities for sustained education program. That's Maine Online Opportunities for Sustained Education, okay? MOOSE, which spells moose. The Moose Program, all right? By the way, we're famous for our mooseys up here, okay, like Bullwinkle and stuff, all right? And people think Maine lobsters, moose, whatever, okay? And so you can't shoot a lobster, but you can every so often get a moose, all right? But with the online opportunities, okay, talk to me about that, because to me, this is incredibly important. And the way I always like to say it is, if they can't get a great physics teacher up in Aroostook County, which is way, way, way north, okay, there is one down in the Portland area. And with technology and online, that kid can access that person. In other words, a great physicist up way, way up there in Caribou, Maine, a future physicist can get physics training. Okay, and so talk to me about what your online opportunities, the Moose program, if I may.
Sure. Well, we knew that this Moose was, we even have a little hand gesture. If you can picture the antlers on your head, you can go ahead and do that.
I'm sure.
It's not fit for radio, but for the podcast. But, so the Moose program basically honors the expertise and creativity of Maine educators by involving them as the developers, creators of project-based, interdisciplinary, online units and modules of and lessons and activities for students that address all of Maine's learning standards K through 12 in every content area. They're all blended. So unlike a lot of online learning programs where, you know, kids engage in mathematics and then they go do a literacy thing, these units are designed specifically to engage kids in critical thinking, in big picture,
right,
thematic, project-based activities where there's an interdisciplinary educational focus, which is one of the most, it's much more engaging, and it's an efficient use of brain energy for these kids who in some cases have some catching up to do. So this is like, the Moose modules are free for everybody. So anyone listening can go online, Maine DOE, and you just like, you could Google that plus Moose and you'll find these modules. We've had hundreds and hundreds of Maine educators come through the training on how to be a more interdisciplinary, project-based, authentic, applied learning instructional expert, and they have worked in teams to create these great, exciting, engaging. It's like go online, and they read some stuff, they click on some stuff, they get some instructions, they close the computer down and go do some stuff, and then they come.
Yeah.
So it's not with their
PBL.
Brains and eyes stuck on a. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's PDL.
It's
provided in a remote way. So.
It's unbelievable. And I just want to go with that just as the example. Computer science, climate science, Holocaust and genocide, STEM, pure STEM, science, technology, engineering, math, career education, okay? And all of these things, okay, it's a pre-K-12 sequence. And, again, all these things, and by the way, they are interdisciplinary. And that's a key thing, and it's a wonderful program. The Moose program, if I may, we're going to laugh now every time we say that, at the Maine DOE. Okay. But it's really just great. And it's odd that it's at the DOE, which is a female deer, which is also an unge like a moose.
I never made that connection. That's awesome.
There you go. It's Moose DOE. It's Moose, though. Okay. And I'm not even going to get into that. Okay. But let me get it again. It's the Maine Online Opportunities for Sustained Education. Pender, we got to go. It is just great to know you. Great to know you.
Oh, it's great. Thank you so much for having me on. And can you give a quick plug to SEL for me? Because we also have an online free open access. Everybody in the world can get it. And it's a social emotional learning curriculum, pre-K through 12.
Well, I should have asked you if we could actually
thing.
Do a whole show on that, because we have just created our SEL today, okay, our website. Okay,
yeah.
As part of our consortium for equity. Yeah, we'll talk about it. I'll get you back on here. Okay, because this
that
SEL is so key. We had so many things to talk about. And if you have time today, there's a good Italian restaurant in Belfast called Del Vino's, right on Main Street.
Oh,
buy a pair of shoes.
That sounds amazing.
And then walk across
the
street. Me. Okay, I love the town. My favorite town. Okay, we go there every summer.
All right,
I'll talk
my
to you
God.
Again.
It sounds amazing. All right, thank you
Thanks,
so much.
Thanks, Pender.
Take
this
care.
Is great. Bye-bye.
All right, Larry. Bye-bye.
Yep. See you later. Bye-bye. Okay, everybody. Wow, is she great or what? That's Pender Macon, who's our Commissioner of Education here in Maine. I'm staying in touch with her. All right? Wow, just amazing. All right? And what a great background to bring to the statewide position. I just love it. We're going to talk some more and do some more work on SEL. Our website is seltoday.org. Okay, we're going to archive this podcast over at ace-ed.org, our consortium for equity, and we'll do more with Pender. She's a lot of fun, and she's in Maine. All right, we're going to archive the show. We're going to get everything. I already said that, so I'm just going to say my name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening.